Blog Talk Radio.
You have made it to Stu and the Nun, an online radio show that looks to inform, educate, and hopefully make you laugh. Stu and the Nun is a show focused on national security, policy, politics, and selfless service. We do this by not only interviewing guests, but also sharing our perspectives and asking you, the listener, to interact with us on our show chat room, via our Facebook page, and on Twitter.
And hello, welcome everyone to another episode of Stu and the Nun. We are kicking it tonight. I believe this is our 20th episode. Yep, 20th episode tonight. And you are again joining Stu, that's me. And I would say Nun, but Nun is taking the night off. There's a lot of stuff going on in the holidays. I'm sure you can appreciate that. And he is spending some quality time with family, as I hope everyone has done through the holidays. So we've given him a night off. He had one day of vacation this year, so he had to use or lose, and he taken it. So I'm joined by my good friend, actually was our in-studio guest host on the very first episode of Stu and the Nun, and he's joining us again tonight. He's a frequent listener, a fan, and what I could call a very long-time old friend, my buddy, the Shard. Hello, Shard. Welcome to Stu and the Shard.
Hey, Troy. Thank you for the wonderful introduction. Thank you for having me. It's very good to be here.
Yes, I appreciate you filling in as
sure.
Our man gets his one night off. Or if he didn't submit his forms properly, he could be AWOL right now. We're not sure. I'll have to get to our administrative department and check that, make sure that
awesome.
He's getting counted. He's not this. That his 4187 didn't get shoved underneath the refrigerator or something, and he's getting charged for his leave. But, yeah. So, anyways, yeah, so I am glad to be broadcasting tonight from the Northern Studio, and Shard is from the Southern Studio, not far from where Nun broadcasts, so
that's
kind of
correct.
Representing.
Yeah. Yeah. Central Texas, man.
That's it. And welcome, and you are hearing me from the newly upgraded Northern Studio. Got some upgrades for the Christmas time, so... I've got some high-speed things going on here. It's looking more and more like a real radio studio all the time, how quickly I can fool people, you know. But, yeah, so what not? So Shard, what you been up to?
Yeah.
How are your holidays?
Well, thank you. It was very good. Just stayed in, local, and since all our family is pretty much here in the local area, so we didn't really have to go anywhere, didn't really host anything, just attended and brought food. And probably the coolest gift I got was a retro analog turntable. Since I guess vinyl records are cool again, Troy. So I've been enjoying
Does that go with your rotary phone that you're calling in from?
The rotary phone with a really long cord that's about 40 feet because it's connected in the kitchen and I'm in the man cave. Yeah, exactly. It's like 1983 all over again, and I just wish I had my parachute pants on. Listening to some Duran Duran 7 and the Ragged Tiger. Yeah.
Well, I'm somewhat representing for you. I just got off the ice. I just finished up a hockey practice. And rushed home to the show. And I'm wearing what the Army tried to reinstitute as parachute pants in the late 90s, early 2000s as the Army PT pants. They're very nylon-y parachute
really?
Pant type. Oh, yeah, yeah. So they're about to close. When I first got them, I was like, wow, we're getting parachute pants for PT pants. Yeah, so, they got rid of the gray sweatpants.
Right.
And they introduce these. Right. They're very nylon-y. They're very roomy. So they're kind of like parachute pants. You can throw on some old school, you know, can't touch this, and do your shuffle back and forth. Yeah. So,
When did the – is that another great Army experiment at changing the uniforms? You know, is that what that is? Apparently
– I'm kind of dated. As you know, you were at my retirement ceremony. I've been out for a while. And it was a long before I got out. So I think they probably have upgraded by now. But you know what? Our guest tonight is still serving in the military. And I think as a senior NCO as he is, he'll be able to update us on what the latest aware is and the latest fashion statements of the U.S. Army, and we'll find out what's going on.
Did the PT scores go up dramatically when they switched from the gray, you know, bottoms to these nylon, more aerodynamic slipstream type things? I mean, you know,
I think the drag cut down. If you're running in the rain, you know, that sweatpant material would certainly, you know, weigh you down with this. You're like, you know, this is like Ono, right? The speed skater, you know, that tight suit. That's unfortunately,
awesome.
Unfortunately, some guys who were not making the Army weight and height standard kind of look like that. They would turn Gore-Tex into spandex, and they kind of made the very loose-fitting PT uniform be very form-fitting and tight, like speed skating. So I'm not
Did they show your name and your number, you know, pretty much? Is it clearly evident? You know, there's no mystery of your.
I think it showed if you're Jewish or not. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're aerodynamic, you know, down there as well, it would be clearly evident, I guess. I don't know. Everybody wins, I guess, with that. Yeah.
There we go. But speaking of guests, I see he's dialed in. I was going to come over and talk to him, but I didn't get a chance. So I'm just going to introduce him. We're going to bring him on tonight on Stu and the Nun, episode 20, the last episode of 2015, our inaugural year of this show. We are going to have Mr. David DiTullio from Defensor, Inc. And as you saw in the description of the show, Defensor is a defense strategies and home defense training company. Very important. In today's time, when we look at things like Paris and San Bernardino and, I don't know, shootings every single day in Baltimore, Chicago, Detroit, L.A., Atlanta, anywhere else, right? So Defensor, Inc. specializes in training civilians, even law enforcement military members in home defense safety and tactics, advanced shooting tactics, and all that. And Dave brings with him quite a bit of experience through his military career and private career in doing that. So we're going to talk with him tonight about that and about this service and kind of a very niche, if you think about it, Doug, you know, very niche kind of, you know, there's security companies for industries and corporations, mm-hmm. but you don't hear a lot about like this focused on the individual homeowner, individual citizen. So we're going to talk to him about that and why he decided to get into this venture. So that's tonight's guest for our one-hour show, our last show here of Stu and the Nun. And before I forget, let me say, for those listening, we will not be returning for a couple weeks. We are going to take, you know, since Nun got tonight off, I'm going to be nice, and he's going to get another night off. We've decided we're going to take our holiday break, because as you notice, we have not taken a break through the holidays. So we are going to take next week off. And will not be on the air. I may put together, if I have time, and that's very good. I may put together a special show on January 5th, 2016, for a maybe a best of 2015 kind of show. I may put together an hour of, you know, just snippets from some of the great interviews we had. If I get a chance to do that, that's quite a bit of hours that goes into that. But if I can, I'm going to put that together. We'll keep an eye on our website, Facebook page. But we're going to put it. I'll be putting it up that we will not have a show next week. We will be returning January 12th, and I will be with the Nun in his home studio on January 12th. And heck, Shard may even be there too. I don't know.
That's right. You never know.
We got craziness going on, but we're going to go over and sample some of his bourbon he got for Christmas, and so we'll be doing it from the Southern Studio on January 12th. So I want to make sure I got that in. So, with that said, Shard, you ready to bring in our first guest?
Absolutely. Let's bring him in.
All right. Okay. Well, I'd like to welcome to the show my good friend, known for quite a few years, compadre, just a guy I like to bust his chops a lot. But he's the CEO, owner of Defensor, Inc., Mr. David DiTullio. David, welcome to Stu and the Nun with Stu and Shard.
Hey guys, this is Dave DiTullio. Just thanks for having me on the show.
Hey Dave, thanks for joining.
Hey, all this talk about parachute pants and these new Army uniforms, they got me in the right place, I think.
I was just gonna ask real quick before we get started. Yeah, I mean, since you're a platoon sergeant, did PT scores dramatically go up? You know, is the deployability factor, you know, gone up dramatically with aerodynamic skin tight pants? Or
I think so. These new Speedos are fantastic. You know, really, it's just about feeling sexy, and with these guys feel good about themselves, just performance goes with it.
You're right. It's all about how you feel about yourself. It's very important. Maybe the soldiers got their safe place while they're in their pants. Maybe that's
what. That's what I was gonna say. Does this make them like their own little self-contained safe space, like when they wear PT?
Yeah, we just get in a circle, you know, we sing Kumbaya, we forget the warm-up and everything, and then we just roll right into it. We hold hands and, run laps. And,
yeah. Sounds like a great Army. That's good. That's all. Well, hey, Dave, since you please tell us a little bit about Defensor, Inc., your niche security company for, I guess, focused on, I guess, the home defense specifically?
Yeah. Well, I got a team of three of us. Pat comes to us from a local police force, and he's a firearms instructor, and a Glock armament trained person to do all the weapons maintenance on weapons. And we got Bill Abbott, who's got over 20 years in the Naval Special Warfare community.
Okay.
And he's getting ready to close his career as well. And all of us have a family, so we're just trying to think of how we can put our training together, and you know, with this growing heroin epidemic that we got in the local area here in New York, and the constant threat we've seen in Lackawanna and in Rochester tied to ISIS, we just felt like we could really help the homeowner themselves prepare themselves both outside the home and inside the home. So, we look at it like a concentric circle. So, you know, it starts out as social media. You know, we're all on it all 24 hours a day. And you're getting excited about a trip, and you splash it all over the social media. You're telling someone that you're going to be gone on a certain time for
right.
your home. So
right.
we look at how people pick their targets. So whether it's a crime of opportunity or it's a specific target, we look at that. And it starts with social media, and we look at the home exterior and the interior. And basically what happens is a lot of companies are out there making money trying to solicit different products and things like that. And we take an approach where there's multiple levels of security within your home. And most of the things that we have here are free to no charge. It's just a different way of looking at your home and the way you approach your home. So we look at landscaping, we look at lighting, we look at, you know, the interior of your home, how you have it laid out. And but what happens is you've got to buy yourself time until local law enforcement can show up. So
right.
the two police officers that I've got will tell you that it takes anywhere from 15 minutes. And if you have 7 feet of snow like we did last year, it could take an hour to get there. And
yeah.
So what do you do? You know,
right.
And so we talk about safe rooms and what you can do in there and how you can assemble your family. And in a worst case scenario, you have to defend on a weapon to take care of the situation. And so we're pro Second Amendment, and we believe
Amen.
In the right to protect your family. And so that's where the other courses come in, where we just talk about developing those skills. You're not always going to be facing a target in that perfect isosceles, you know, stance. So you could find yourself on your back, your side, behind things, having to maneuver up and down stairs. And so we take that
right.
expertise that we've had and apply that.
So how does your excuse me, if you could just give us a quick background of your experience, I guess your military experience, and how that helps you do what you do to such a high level.
Yeah, well, I started out in the Navy, and that was against my father's will.
Wow.
He was in the Air Force.
Wow.
So I grew up in an Air Force brat. And in true tradition, I denied even wanting to get in the military, so I tried college. And I was going to be a rock star, so that's where the parachute pants
oh,
came in very
man.
Well.
Man, look at all these synergies, man. I still think there's an opportunity.
There is. That's my fallback plan, anyways.
Absolutely. It's mine, too.
So you know, being a rock star, it does all right, but it doesn't pay the bills, and nor does it get you good grades in college. So, you know, they asked me politely to either fix my grades or not, and I decided, or my parents, rather, decided that college wasn't for me, so they decided to come back to New York. But while I was in college, my drummer had a cousin who was in the SEALs, and he was talking to me because at that time I was a diver and a heavy runner. So he said, you know, hey, have you ever thought about this? And I said, no, I never really thought about those marine animals. And they said, no. These things that you enjoy, I do for a living. So that's the first time I ever heard of, you know, these type of people like that. So long story short, that was in the back of my mind, and college didn't work out, so I was looking for a viable option. So I decided to join the Navy back in 93. And I took the long route because the dive fair program would put you right into it, and there's such a high attrition rate. So I knew I wanted to learn more about it. So I took 2 years to get in shape and learn why it's so hard and what the problems were, and I trained for it. And so I was in class 211 in Buds down in Coronado, California, and I was there for a while. I had broken a rib there, had a couple injuries on the old course, and we had an instructor K died in that class. He was 25 years old in the dive tower just before our class was going in there. And that really started ringing home to how serious this kind of occupation was with what I was about to get into. And at that point, I haven't seen my daughter, who was just born, in several months. So I took a good week of thinking about it and ultimately made the decision for my family to not pursue that further, because I would have an obligation that would keep me away from the home pretty much, you know, 6 years, maybe 5 years out of that time I'd be deployed or training, and 1 year of home with the family overall, you know.
Right.
So.
Right.
So, but I learned a lot of valuable lessons in that. So I took that and applied that to a lot of things in my life. So once I ended up getting out of the Navy, and I went into the reserves, and that's where I met Bill Abbott, who was, ironically, at the same time going through Naval Special Boat Teams and their training. And he remained with them and continues to do so now in the reserves and is soon to retire himself. But we've been friends for a long time, and that's how Bill and I know each other. So while he stayed in the Navy, I crossed over to the dark side, and I met Troy. He was my first sergeant. And I got into the infantry because I thought, you know, they had this cool thing called 19th Group in the reserves in the National Guard, which I used to make fun of.
Right.
And, so I said, you know what, I want to try these guys out. And so I came over from the Navy and got to work with some really good guys. And they had deployed, and while they deployed, I wasn't able to go with them because I didn't have this 11 Bravo thing, they were calling it, this reclass. So I stayed back, and when they came back, we switched over to a reconnaissance unit and specialized in maritime insertions, and we did a lot with helicopters, and it started really turning into something that intrigued me and challenged me at the same time. So
right.
I was able to kind of get the best of both worlds and still be with my family, or so I thought anyways.
Yeah, perfect. No, that's excellent. That's interesting that you met Troy. So was he like your first unit that you were in the guard, I guess?
Yeah, actually, I was there with them, and I'm one of the few that are still there from back in that time. We have just two other people, really, that have been there as long as I have.
Okay.
And so I found a home with them, and it's been great. I've deployed to Afghanistan with them back in 2008 to 2009, and I was challenged there. That was kind of like my, you know, up until that point, I was always in the sidelines, kind of the water boy for football, you know.
Right.
And when we deployed to Afghanistan, we broke up into teams and kind of were dispersed throughout the country, and Troy did much the same thing.
Yeah.
My major at the time, who was doing the left seat, right seat with me, was asked if he needed a E8 to fill that position. And at that time, I was only an E6. So he threw me under the bus and said, you know, Dave, they asked me about this, but I think that you're fully capable of running this team as a team sergeant. So what do you think? And, you know, a little sweaty palms and a big gulp later, I said, you know what, let's go for it. And
awesome.
Ended up being a great experience, challenged me, and I got to run – pretty much any kind of operation I wanted to. So we spent a lot of time training the indigenous forces over there. So we had a team of Afghans that we were kind of in charge of. And, you know, we taught them teamwork. We taught them how to operate their weapon systems, how to maneuver as an individual and as a team. We did reconnaissance missions, direct contact missions, and we did a lot of great things. And like I said, it was a great challenge, and I've been honored to work with both the nationals that were over there and my guys that I still talk to today.
Yeah, that's a lot of like what Troy did, right? Troy, I mean, just training, I guess, like ANA or whatever, you know.
Yeah, it was the same. A little bit, you know, the mission had changed, you know, a little bit, but generally the concept was the same. And it's a FID mission, right? Foreign Internal Defense, where you work with local indigenous forces, trying to teach them the basics of how to operate a military and everything that goes along with it. You know, the maintenance, the logistics, the whole shoot match, right? How to build teamworks and teams and camaraderie and develop SOPs, I mean, all that stuff, but at a much, much more basic level than we do, because you're literally grabbing guys out of villages is what they're grabbing.
And,
you know, they can't, if they had skills, they would not be, that's pretty much what I would say. If they had any kind of skills, they were not in the Army, right? At least when I was there, the guys that if they were the guys that hung out behind the band room with the Metallica shirt on and the plaid shirt over it that weren't going anywhere in life, no offense to you, Doug, but that's who they grabbed up to be in the A&A for the most part. Dave, I'll let Doug kind of open that up and go a little bit. So you've taken your Navy experience, you've taken your Guard experience and a lot of other stuff and other experience you have, both current and past, to kind of develop this. I guess a question I have for you is, and you've had a few different business ventures in your life, I know of, but what did you see in this one that made you say, it's very niche, but there's a market for it, and I think I can develop this and build a business. You know, it's not just going to be a hobby. You're trying to build it in something. What did you see or what did you hear? Like, were you talking to people? Were you seeing just a lack of something out there? Were people coming to you asking for this kind of service? How did this all start?
Well, you know, Bill and Pat were the ones who kind of saw this. As you know, I had two business ventures that kind of came and went for different reasons, and I was like at the point where I just closed my my one business, and I was like, I'm really not looking for anything else. I kind of wanted to tone things down, but they approached me on some of the different courses that they were teaching or wanted to get into, and they met with me just to get my input and asked if I would be interested in, you know, whenever they ran some ranges to help them out on that. And I said, you know, sure. Anytime I can shoot, man, throw lead down range, I'm for it. And, we talked for a while and bounced a lot of ideas back, and I guess it caught their attention. And I got a call later from Bill saying, hey, we talked and we'd like you to join our team. So it was their kind of baby, if you want to call it that. In law enforcement, they use simunitions, and much like the military as well, uses simunition for force-on-force training. And so we really are looking at that as bringing that to the East Coast, and you just don't see that in the civilian side. So we've been meeting with lawyers and police and breaking down the penal laws, trying to figure out logistically how we can handle this and do this. But really what it is, in most states, and especially in New York, to get a pistol permit, you take this safety course, and you can't touch a pistol yet, and it could take up to 18 months to 24 months to get your pistol permit, still not touching a pistol. Then once you get it, next thing you know, you're able to carry a pistol and be out in public, and there's no training required in that. And so I don't know how it makes you guys feel, but, you know, shooting is a perishable skill. And even those who are in the know, if you don't do it for a while, you lose it. And so we've got people I've talked to even at work who are carrying. You know, there's this woman who came up to me and said, hey, you know, I've got this pistol. I heard you guys offer classes. I've been carrying for a number of years. I've never taken my pistol apart, and I've never fired a round. Yet she's carrying this in the public and someday may be asked to stand up and defend herself, and who knows where those rounds are going to go. And so, you know, we saw a need that needs to be addressed, and I think the problem is we spend so much time coming up with these knee-jerk reaction on banning different types of weapons because of pistol grips and forward grips and flash suppressors and things that just make no sense from a shooter's perspective. And yet we're not going to give keys to someone who passed their permit for driving and say, well, you passed the test, the written test, so go jump in a car and go for it. How crazy is it to put a weapon in someone's hand who's never handled it before but passed a certifying class on safety and never touched a weapon? We wouldn't do
it.
But that's how the laws are set up. So I'm a big proponent of the Second Amendment. I believe it's our right to protect ourselves and our families and those that we love. But I also believe in training and you know, stuff that makes sense. And that's kind of where we come in. We're filling that gap, trying to educate, train, and, you know, just it's not just a target that you're shooting at, a paper target. You got to understand the risk that things are coming at you. They can move fast. You're in a dynamic world, three-dimensional, and you got to be able to be comfortable in any position at any time of day. And that's kind of where we come in like that.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I was going to ask if I'm...
Go ahead, Doug. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you mentioned that, you know, I'm down in Texas, so I guess we have a little bit more freedom, at least with regard to, you know, weapons and 30-round magazines and stuff like that. So can you say again how long the wait period is to get your permit or whatever? What was that again? I was kind of shocked.
In New York right now, you're looking at 18 to 24 months.
I'm sorry.
Is that not crazy or what, man?
You talk about, you know, it's almost like it's purposefully, administratively slow to kind of, you know, weed out the people who, you know what I mean? It's almost like, I guess I really don't need to follow up, you know.
We need to clarify a little bit. Now it goes by county. So there's no doubt that New York's not a gun-friendly, Second Amendment-friendly state. We have, look at the governor. But, Dave, I don't know how much you worked around the other counties, but they are a little bit faster, if not quite a bit faster.
You go to Niagara County, and yes, you can get it in like 6 months. You know,
right. You go to Wyoming, Cattaraugus, Orleans, and those others, Gaines. All the other counties out there, except for like where Syracuse or Albany's located in New York City area, but Erie County is the worst outside of New York City. And what it is sad is they're breaking the state law. The state law says they must issue within 6 months unless there's a reason not to. And so they're knowingly breaking the state law, and no one's holding them accountable for it. So it takes, upwards. I mean, and then when you do get a pistol permit in, say, New York, they typically only give you New York doesn't have what they call concealed carry. They have what they consider restricted or unrestricted. And restricted means you can carry it, like, to the range and that could target practice. So you can't carry unrestricted, you can carry concealed. And they typically give people restricted for 3 years to make sure they don't shoot themselves or shoot someone else. And then you can apply for an unrestricted. But then you got to go back through the whole process again, a little bit faster. But you got to go through and pay all the fees and pay all the county fees and do all that kind of stuff to be able to carry concealed. And so think about it. If you want to carry concealed, unless you're in a special circumstance, you have to have a regular pistol permit for at least 3 years before you can even apply. If you go to any county outside of Erie, Niagara, in New York City, if you go to all those other counties, they don't even ask you. You get it unrestricted right out of the gate. I mean, that's the difference in this state. They will, if you go to those counties that are in the rural areas that are very conservative, you don't even have to ask or write a justification for an unrestricted. You get a pistol permit, they're like, here's your unrestricted. I mean, that's how different it is. Yeah.
Right.
New York, we just go up at 2 o'clock in the morning and make laws. You know, the New York Safe Act was proof of that. And so we're just a knee jerk, do whatever we got to do to make things happen without getting people's approval and doing anything that makes sense. So it's just crazy.
Right. But, you know, you bring up a good point. If people have had pistol permits for a long time and maybe haven't shot, they don't shoot regularly. They don't come from military or legal background. And like I said, maybe never even changed mags out. That spring is just it's trained to stay compressed, which is guaranteed a failure to fire or double feed or something when they ever do have to use it. They don't shoot regularly. It's probably full of rust. And I know you have some advanced tactics. You kind of mentioned them lightly earlier. A good friend I turned on to your business that went to it. I mean, and I think he came out just raving reviews. But talk a little bit about some of those advanced things that people may know how to stand at a target line and shoot 20 rounds or 50 rounds at 7 and 10 meters or 15 meters. But what are some of you take people through that are, I would say, are more real-world scenarios that they can find themselves in?
Well, looking at it, what we run typically when we talk about our advanced tactics now, instead of the fundamentals now, we're moving into a non-traditional range, meaning that we're not on a firing line anymore. So we're in a moving status like that. So what we do is we get them first looking at their pistol and saying, all right, you're not always going to have your strong arm ready. If you were to take a bullet, injure your arm, and you're still in the fight, you need to be able to use your weak arm. So we train on how to transition to, let's say, if you're right-handed, moving to your left hand, and how to be able to change a magazine one-handed. And so we practice just that basic skill alone. You'd be surprised at how many people have never even thought about it, let alone tried it. And so that's one of the first things that we look at. Then we get them into their car, and their own personal car, and we get them to practice, you know, you're wearing your pistol, and now someone's approaching your car, and they're threatening you with a knife, a gun, whatever they're going to do to attack you. And first of all, most people don't realize that you can fire right through your windshield. But in order to do that, you got to be able to get out of your seatbelt without getting all wrapped up into it. So the standard way of getting out of your seatbelt is not going to work for getting out of your seatbelt and being able to access your pistol. So we work on a technique that enables you to do that. You're able to practice that every day you get out of your car just to make muscle memory as far as getting out of the seatbelt. And then we just talk about the draw from that position. And once we move out of the vehicle, we show the different parts of the vehicle you can use for defense, and they give you the best shooting angles that you need and to be able to break contact, for lack of a better word on that. Once we move from there, we get them over to, we move into the live fire then, and they'll shoot from different areas. So they'll do kneeling, both the left and right side. They'll move to their side. So if they're on the ground, they'll fire from their left side and their right side. They move to another station and fire from their back, and learn not to blow their shoes off. And then they'll move up to another station that allows them to basically round a corner and then face their targets and engage multiple targets on the move. And that involves changing magazines. And throughout that whole process, we throw dummy rounds in there, so they don't know at any point when their weapon's going to malfunction, but they have to deal with that as well. And so that's just like the level one that we're teaching right there. The other advanced levels get into force on force, moving at a faster pace, looking more at cover and concealment, and getting into room clearing and things like that.
That's awesome that you force them to have to go through, I guess, immediate action on their pistol, or, you know, and also to reload and under duress and that sort of thing. That's awesome. Do you guys, again, it might be a, you know, I just take things for granted here in Texas, but besides, is it all pistol, or do you guys incorporate other weapons like, you know, ARs or shotguns or something?
We do. We have shotguns and ARs as well that we will train on. And what we do is, as rather than bringing our own weapons for them to use, we like them to use what they're going to have in their home or wherever
right.
they go to and prefer to shoot with. So that way they're training with the weapon that they're going to use. They get comfortable with it. And we try to encourage them to wear the exact same things that they would out in public. And, you know, whether it's with gloves on or they wearing jackets or T-shirts or whatever, you know, the temptation is to throw on all the Gucci gear, right, and throw on your helmets and your tactical gear and stuff. But unless that's your normal day-to-day wear, we encourage them to wear what they're used to wearing on a day-to-day basis.
Right. Again, you're just keeping it real, so to speak. You just keep it real. The conditions is realistic and everyday as it can be, because, you know, that's the way it's probably going to most likely go down, if, God forbid, if something does.
Now,
yeah, it's a confidence builder for sure.
Dave, did some of that come from your military background, or is it your partner's background, but or your military background of, hey, kind of, as we say in the Army, right, train as you fight. You know, the military for a long time, the Army had this, until the war started in 01, and we got this new mindset. It was always, you know, my 40 rounds downrange, prone, you know, unsupported,
yep.
and foxhole supported, and kind of, and there was no concept of adding smoke and noise and distractions and all that stuff. And then in the last 15 years, we've been doing that, or 14 years, that's kind of changed the Army's mindset. Is that kind of where some of that came from, just
you saw that Absolutely. That was an effective way to train? Okay.
We take a lot of best of pretty much everything. And what I tell people is, you know, because we get in with law enforcement and we get in with military, is that, as you guys know, you get five people together and you all talk about room clearing. You're going to have different techniques and tactics. But at the end of the day, you're going to find what works best for you. So we like to call that tools for your toolbox. And what we're doing is basically just giving you things that we have learned, lessons learned. So we're employing the latest strategies used by Naval Special Warfare and the SEAL teams. Bill and I had worked together when we got into the reserves on a lighter side of the house in the Mobile Inshore Undersea Warfare Unit. We developed strategies for visit board search and seizure using the Marine Corps fast team tactics. And we created basically the whole SOP for that group there, and brought that and deployed with that overseas. So we did a lot of that with involved in tight spaces. And then just with our years of combat experience, real life, you know, this is what was taught to us in the classroom, and then this is what we learned. So we try to employ all those different things, then including civilian law enforcement stuff, and just really came up with, you know, hey, what works? What can we teach that'll give them the options? So we teach all the different options, and we encourage them to find what works best for them. But we try to keep that open and help them develop their own personal SOP, if you will.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's been a great road. I think we've found that a lot of people are interested in this type of training. There's nothing out there right now that's really doing that, unless you're in the military or law enforcement. And what we're finding is people are just, they're gaining confidence. Your friend, Troy, was, you know, he stated this was a lot of information to take in at one time. And by the end of it, he was like, at first I thought it was kind of overwhelming. And by the end of it, he had confidence. His skills dramatically improved. And I think he walked away with a better understanding of the three-dimensional battlefield, if you will, that you may encounter yourself. And so he just has more tools that he can walk away with and be more confident than just your standard shooting at a paper target that never fires back, you know.
Right. That's awesome, because I think you kind of nailed it. I think a lot of people, you know, I think about some people in my family either never served or never shot a, you know, rifle or anything, and they're just so ignorant and they're just so fearful, you know. It's like fear of the unknown, you know, scary black gun or something. And I think, you know, if anything else, I mean, you're just bringing education, you know, to the masses, so to speak, to people who would otherwise never been exposed to something. And, you know, you give them confidence, like, yeah, it's not self-aware. The weapon's not going to spring up spontaneously and start shooting things like the machines coming alive in that, what, Maximum Overdrive movie back in 85 or something, you know. It's just, but I think people, like, they, you know, they blame the gun, right? Oh, the gun went off. Like, no, some, you know, somebody was driving that thing. So I think that's awesome. I think education and confidence is key to a lot of things, whether it's, you know, what you're doing or, you know, you driving a car or something. It's the same kind of logical, demystified approach.
Well, you can't stress enough that the weapon is not, I mean, the tool, the gun, the knife, the car, whatever you have, is just a tool, and the
exactly.
person is the actual weapon. And that's what people need to understand, is the mindset of the person behind whatever it is. If I want to do damage to someone, I don't need a pistol. I don't need a rifle.
Oh.
But, you know, if I'm going to have it, that's going to be my choice, and I'm going to take care of business. But, you know, these problems that we're seeing with these active shooting situations here, I mean, no one wakes up saying, you know, I'm going to be a victim today. But unfortunately, you go to these movie theaters and 20 people die. San Bernardino, 14 people died. They never woke up thinking that. You know, this
right.
Paris attack was a calculated attack. Over 128 people were killed and over 300 injured. And if people think that it ends overseas, they're sadly mistaken. San Bernardino is a prime example of it. I mean, they had basically a bomb-making factory in their home and a stockpile
yeah.
of weapons and ammo. That's not something that was just, you know what, I'm really sick of this boss, I'm going to go shoot him. This was a calculated, you know, the guy goes and gets his wife from Pakistan over in Saudi Arabia. She's just as fooled by it as her husband is, you know, with that Saeed Farouk or whatever his name was, that it was just, you know, they had a plan. And
yep.
Unfortunately, people died. And some of those people were probably people that thought, you know what, it's unicorns and pixies, man. Nothing's going to happen here.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Unfortunately,
no, you're right. No, people live in a state of denial like you wouldn't believe, man. It's crazy. And I think we're here in the States, we've been victims of our own success for so long. We've been so stable. We've been so relatively safe. You know, we've been blessed with, what, 2 weak neighbors, one to the north, one to the south, you know, never really had to worry about being invaded, you know, locally or anything, you know, for 200-plus years. So we've just been lulled into this, like, oh, it's like this everywhere, right? People, you know, people are just like you and me. They just want to get up and be safe, go to Starbucks and, you know, all these first world and just only have first world problems, right? You know, and my Starbucks isn't hot enough or, you know, damn, it's too hot in here. Let me turn up the air conditioner, you know, but you know, that's sort of the extent of their worldview, right? And they just assume it's like this everywhere and everyone, is just as, you know, docile as they are and everything, all the examples you just noted, it's like, no, that's really how the world is over here. We're in some kind of, you know, as blessed as we are, but it's still a bubble. It's like, it's a blessing and a curse in some ways because this is just our normal routine and people just don't think about, they don't appreciate what we have here and how good we have it on so many different levels, whether it's material or financial or safety too. So, you know, having been a civilian now for a long time, it's interesting, you know, what I've learned from other civilians who never served or anything. So anyway, there's my early rant, Troy. Sorry.
All right. It's all right.
He's like, where did we leave off?
No, I do want to ask you something. I want to follow up on, and you talked about how my friend, was kind of overwhelmed at first. Did you kind of have it? I'm wondering, did you kind of break down how we did in the military? You kind of broke down what I would call individual task or the granular parts of everything he was going to learn, and it just seemed like, and then you kind of brought it together in a collective or team the collective kind of at the end, and he saw how all the principles and fundamentals were applied. Is that why you think he felt kind of overwhelmed and wasn't so much at the end? Is that how you approach it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it starts at a very basic level, but it covers a lot of different things, and there's a lot of minute details. And basically, through repetition, we build on each of those skills. So we start out basic. And, I mean, even as simple as the different ways to grip a pistol and your sight picture, breathing, and alignment and stuff, these are just basic things that you and I or the three of us would take for granted. But it's almost... I'm almost surprised at how little people know, and then they have access to a weapon, and that's nothing against your friend by any means. He's a great shot and knows a lot, and I think it's just because we put a lot of information in a 2-hour period, but it's more designed to give you skills through repetition and things that you can take home with you and not be on a range and practice inside your home all the different things. So. While it seems like a lot of information at first, we individually go through each station and work and tweak the different angles of approach and the different things that might be, placing an elbow here, putting your head over here, straightening an arm out over here, and this is the best way to get up from this position like that. So just getting up from the ground seems like a basic skill, there's a way to do that without getting your head shot off and utilizing your body and still maintain eyes on the target and your weapon on target. And so,
right.
You know, these are things that the general person just may never have thought about. And that's what's great to see, is to see that people are challenged. And just like your friend, he was a phenomenal student on that. He took it in and he absorbed it and applied it rather quick. And then even himself, that light bulb just went off. And through repetition, he was able to see how it all tied together.
Right, right. Now, so you pretty much took the fundamentals of what we, like, kind of what we do naturally in the military and in law enforcement, just repetitive muscle memory, developing skills, and trying to instill that in a few hours with the civilian community. I mean, that sounds like, if I were to sum it up, that's pretty much what you're doing, right? You're trying to cram those best of practices and be like, you know, open up, here comes the fire hose, right?
Yeah, and now they're designed to follow up on each other. So I know that he came from a background, a weapons background, that he had mentioned taking the fundamentals of firearms course, and that is designed more of, you know, here's how you stand, here's how you hold it, this is how you breathe, how you look down the sights,
and all, you know, the sight picture and all that. But it sounded like he's already been out there and done that. So the challenge for us with a person like him was, you know, do we start him out at that basic level? Is that going to be too basic for him? Or do we bring him up to the next one? But in general, we like to bring people through the pistol permit course, all the stuff that we reinforce there. We do the fundamentals of firearms. And then we get him out from the paper targets onto three-dimensional targets and movement. And so he was kind of right in between the two. And you know, through his own admission, it seemed overwhelming, but I think he wasn't giving himself as much credit because he did really good, and it was very safe environment for him.
Good, good, yeah. So you that's for him. Now, in a course like that, you run just a few people through. Imagine trying to do more almost a one-on-one or, you know, very low student-to-teacher ratio.
Yes.
But versus your regular classes, you're doing regular classroom classes like pistol permits, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like our home defense course is it's a classroom setting, so it's death by PowerPoint, right? But we bring a lot of humor to it. We bring some seriousness to it, and basically we get them to draw a layout of their home in front of them, and then we begin breaking down everything from social media and the different walls you can build for security, the different layers of security, I should say. That you can have and employ at little to no cost. So we basically discuss these things and talk about the advantages and disadvantages of certain lighting and fences and different types of fences and different things that you might look at with your house. And so what we do is we allow them through inductive learning to say, this is what he means, because this is my situation in my home, and they can figure it out for themselves as they build that within their own home. And so we just lay out all that. That's in a classroom setting. Our introduction to firearms is a course that, if you've never had one and you're thinking about it, we have an introduction to firearms, which is just putting a training weapon in your hands and letting you kind of function that weapon just as you would normally, teach you how to stand with it, and just see, you know, am I comfortable even having a weapon in my hand? You know, years ago, I was getting ready to go to Korea. I was going to be gone for a little while. So I said to my wife, you know, here's my .357 Ruger. If you ever need it, you're home alone with my daughter, so this is how you hold it. And when I put it in her hands, she was shaking. And I said, you know what? Forget I have this. Put this back where it goes and call the police and run. Because she's just not comfortable with it. And it's not for everyone. There's a huge responsibility that gun owners have, and I'm not even sure that they're fully aware of the responsibility, because, you know, you're not just shooting a target. Once you put that weapon on your hip, you pull that out, that means someone's going to die. And there's a lot of psychological issues that come along with that, and then you've got to live with the consequences of probably being sued, the psychological problems that you have with that, and the social problems you have with that. And so it's a big responsibility, and we try to make sure that people are very aware of what they're taking on and the seriousness of it. And yet, there's a competitive side of it where you can have fun with it. So, right. You know, train and challenge each other and compete and things like that. So we're trying to bring the best of all that together and give people options. And every step of the way, no matter where you're at, whether you feel like you're an expert or you just feel like you don't know your weapon well enough, we try to bring that level to you, to where you can be challenged and think outside the box. And
right. So have you had anyone, like you say, you had them walk through, kind of do their own analysis of their home, but have you done this, or has anyone asked you to come to their house and do a security analysis? Is that part of it? Is that your scope of offerings, or do you pretty much say no, you know, this is, you're going to do your own analysis?
Well, we give them the tools to self-analyze themselves, because we teach them to look at their home through the eyes of, you know, a criminal or someone who has ill intent for you. So we teach them from that perspective, which is a little different than someone coming to your house and saying, you know, you just put your lights here, put this system over here, and put this camera over here, and good luck. You know, we teach people, you know, why are you becoming a victim? What kind of things are you doing? And what is a person who has a desire to find money and get access to it because they have a drug problem, or they found a crime of opportunity because you left your garage open and I found something that I really wanted in there, or, you know, you're a specific target. So we talk to them through the eyes of someone who would be looking to do them harm, and allow them to go back to their home and say, wow, I never really thought about my house in this perspective, you know. Just changing my blinds, it doesn't allow someone to look up into my house and those type of things. I never thought about that before. But we do offer a service where if they want to call us to come over and take a look at their home and give them some advice, we certainly do that.
Okay. So how has business been? Has it been taking off? Are you doing commercials or advertising, word of mouth? And where do you see things going in 2016?
I don't know. I tell you what, man. December was our biggest month, and we're moving into January. It's probably going to triple that. And
awesome.
I'm already looking at people to try to follow up on emails and text and phone calls because it's getting kind of hard to juggle all that. But I've been pleasantly surprised. I went into this not sure where the moneymaker was going to be, if you will. And, you know, once you, when you get into something, it's inevitable that something changes that you never saw coming. And if you're able to adapt to it, you know, that all of a sudden it turns into something totally different than what you expected. But our pistol permit classes, I guess I was in the fog. I never realized how many people were going for it. So I think I owe Obama a thank you letter for putting more weapons and ammo on the streets. But it's been good for us, and I have nothing but good things to say. You know, I got to thank all the guys who are supporting us and helping us get the word out. And but no, our classes have been going great, and it's coming from a lot of different directions. So
awesome.
I think our next step for us is going to be we're looking at, you know, 50 to 60 acres of land because we need to take out the middleman and start opening up our own ranges. So we want to have different competitive lanes. A sniper known distance range, and then just lanes for guys to shoot that want to develop their own, you know, whatever they're doing. They just want to shoot and hang out. So, but eventually I'd like to have, a building that has, rooms that you can go up and downstairs, maneuver in and out of rooms, and have, people coming for you, looking for you. So force on force kind of training.
Like an op four, yeah. Like an op. Okay.
Well,
yeah,
that's cool. And that's a good point because if someone is defending their home, if they are a pistol, or even if they aren't a pistol holder, if they could have a shotgun at home or whatever, and someone's breaking into their home, teaching the basics of pieing a corner of what you know the state laws require, what you have to do before taking a shot. All that kind of stuff would probably be, I mean, just a huge benefit, right, for many folks, even those that aren't pistol owners or wannabe.
Just think about when you're on a range, you're shooting at a target, and you've been taught all your life not to point that at anyone you're not intending to shoot. So your average civilian never intends to shoot anyone, I think. I think they buy their weapon, they think they live in a society where they'll never have to use it, and they go to the range and shoot. And Ray, and I don't want to pick on Ray, but Ray's awesome. But, you know, I was pointing a gun at Ray, a simulated gun at Ray while he was in his car, and it was like he was afraid to point it at me. And I found that very interesting because he raised a good point, and that's where our company comes in, is I want you to have that muscle memory to get comfortable with pointing it at a person because the next time you may have to do that may be the real deal. And you can't you can't hesitate, you can't think twice about it, you don't play around with it. But you need to be prepared psychologically for that fact that when someone's coming at you, you need to point that muzzle at that person and put them down. And that raised, it kind of reinforced what we're all about, but it also raised raised the flag. It reminded me how little people are prepared for that type of scenario. And so he quickly overcame it. We encouraged it where a lot of places won't. And but in this type of environment, people need to be prepared for that.
Yeah. Hey, so awesome. We got to wrap this up. We've had you on for a long time. I know you have an early morning, but where can people find you at? Where can they find Defensor Inc.? How can they reach out to you to try to sign up for classes so we can make January be five times the size of December?
There you go, man. Well, first of all, I really appreciate you guys getting me out here and getting my voice out there, and it's great catching up with you.
Wow.
We're on the web, so defensor.weebly.com. And that's our website, and we're on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, so we're all over the place. So, but my number is 716-982-5497, so give me a holler, shoot me a text, and find us on the website, and we'll get you the training you need, and we'll help make it happen.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for what you're doing, Dave. It's, you know, not only for your service to our country, but, you know, I look at this as you're continuing to serve to educate and train you know, all of us, you know, because like you said, you never know what's going to happen. So be prepared. It's awesome.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you, Dave. Appreciate for coming on Stewing the Nun. And when you have something new going on, if something you want to get out there, you guys offer new classes or programs or just want to come on and rant and talk about stuff, let me know. We'd love to have you back on.
Fantastic, man. Thanks a lot, Troy. Good catching up with you again, man.
Awesome.
All right,
thanks,
we'll talk to you later.
Take care, man.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, that was Dave DiTullio, Defense Marine. Check him out. You know, the way I think about it, Doug, we talk about it. You train hard and you fight. If Dave can make that work in New York, well, he can make that work anywhere.
Oh, I was going to say, if you wanted to, you know, make it, you know, interstate or something, you know, he talked about, you know, wanting acreage and stuff. So, you know, it would be great to have him back on and talk about, you know, later after they have more and more success and they grow the business and see where it'll end up. But, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if you have all places, New York, Maryland, New Jersey, that's the three worst when it comes to.
Oh, my gosh, I know.
So if he can,
I mean, what a gutsy guy to even do that in those kind of environments where it's frowned upon by you know, too many people, especially in the government level there in those places. So that's just, you know, it just freaks me out that it's so radically different than where we are in Texas with regards to that. So.
Yeah, so with that, what a great guest. They're doing some awesome stuff, and what a great idea for, I mean, and look, you know, we talked about, you know, even given the classes, he's picking up on stuff that we take for granted, you know, in the military and the law enforcement.
Right, right. We don't, exactly, yeah. I mean, and the ignorance is just, and you know, the people just don't know. I mean, they don't know what they don't know, and I'm glad he's there educating people because, you know, he's almost like a force multiplier, Troy, because, you know, if we're on the front lines of terrorism, wherever we are, just sitting around doing our normal jobs, then, you know, we all need to be as prepared to not only defend ourselves, but to defend not only our families and friends, but our fellow citizens as well. So,
right, right. Hey, we got a couple minutes left. Anything you want to rant about for a minute?
Let's see. Let me look. Well, I'm just looking at some high. See what you think about this. Al-Qaeda reemerges in Afghanistan. I don't know. I heard something like 30% of the country or something's back in the hands of, like, of course,
yeah,
I don't know what
well,
the Taliban or whatever, whatever they call themselves.
That could
there.
Be why they're now where our ministry or our defense, the Pentagon, is pushing to keep Bagram and not turn over every base in Afghanistan. And now
yeah,
I just heard tonight that the general in charge of Afghanistan is possibly going to ask for more troops. They're not wanting to give up Bagram. They want to keep a foothold in the country, which is pretty smart. I mean,
I agree. And unfortunately, that's no real safe haven either, since we lost five airmen last week, you know, around there somewhere. I agree. At least have a staging base there from which to gather intelligence and to stamp out any emerging threats over there in that area at least. So. Yeah, I guess they won't call it boots on the ground though, Troy. They'll call it something else, some other, you know, convoluted term.
Yeah. Well, let me my rant is apparently there's a story coming out. I've known about this for a while through some of the work I do, but DHS, Department of Homeland Security, is saying that some of the IDs issued by states, because they're so easy to get, are not going to be valid to get on a plane. So we're talking millions of people, states like New York, states like Minnesota, Wisconsin, all these different states that are not compliant because – and there's an extension again for people. So they're going to start requiring people to have passports because they don't trust their states because it's just so easy to get a fake license or whatever. I mean, it's amazing that – you know, people come in from outside our country, get IDs and get all this stuff, everything like that. And now we're going to get punished because we're not going to be able to fly within our own country. So,
yeah,
that's,
that's how it works, Troy, when you're not with the program, you know, we'll let you do this and this, but, you know, ultimately, you know, we'll control you this other way. And this actually more nefarious and, you know, they restrict your movement, you know, that's not really is it really a free country anymore? Because that's kind of a big deal, right? Freedom of movement.
Right.
You
if they just, you know, maybe required people to be real citizens and show some real proof when they get an ID, maybe we'd be all right, you know.
Yeah, but, that's right. That's exactly, yeah, they'll watch you and me, but they don't, yeah, I know.
And it's a lot of states, but yeah, so anyways.
God
that,
help us
Doug,
all.
I want to thank you for joining me tonight in our last episode.
My pleasure.
Of Stu and the Nun.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, it was a great honor, and I hope you have a happy new year, as all our listeners
yes.
have a happy and safe new year.
Same to you, brothers, yeah, so. And thank you all for
all
listening.
Right.
Yeah, hey, Troy, we'll catch you when you get down this way again sometime soon, hopefully.
Absolutely. All right, you have a good night. Everyone have a good night, and we'll see you all in a couple weeks. Remember, we're taking next week off. Everybody have a good night. Thank you, and see you then.
Bye-bye.